You are listening to The Talking Show on K-Chung Radio, Chinatown's only...
Only.
Only micro-broadcasting radio station. My name is Nicholas Miller, and I'm here, as always, with Steve Cato.
Hello.
I was working on a bit there, like the only one to survive COVID-19 quarantine.
Right. Yeah, imagine we are the last broadcast medium remaining.
Yeah. Well, I saw this sad article this morning, but then, headline, I should say. But then when I read the article, it was unclear what was really going on. But Amoeba Hollywood is closing.
I heard.
But then did you read the press release they put out?
No.
It seemed like this was always the plan.
Yeah.
They're kind of, it's like the headline made it sound like they closed because of COVID-19 quarantine, which I'm sure didn't help.
Yeah, right.
But they already had architectural renderings of their new space that they've been building out for the last few months.
Yeah.
So their plan was always to move, and I think it just accelerated the process.
Yeah. I mean, Sam Davis, who's been on the show, right?
Yeah, and I suspect he's been to Amoeba Records as well.
Well, he has worked at Amoeba Records.
Oh yeah, so he's been many times.
So he has he went I think many times a week for a while.
Yeah.
Sam's inside track was that they had been effectively like about to close that location at least. For a long time. I mean, the value of that real estate, where it is, you know, all the writing had been on the wall for a while.
Right.
Do you know where their new space is going to be?
I did see it. I think it's also in Hollywood.
Oh, that's good.
And it looks bad. It looks like, you know, like they built a high-end apartments for college students.
Yeah.
And it's occupying the first floor kind of thing.
Well,
that's what the render made it look like. I mean, don't judge a book by its render, but
I mean,
that was my impression.
So it's in a new building, so it's going to look like that because that's what all the new buildings look like.
Yeah, and there's just no, it's not sensible given the prevailing attitudes to like allow for a bizarrely large neon sign and this and all the cool stuff
right.
that made that space, that the facade looks so incredible. On the inside, it'll probably be fine. It'll be, you know,
yeah, a
rows
store.
And rows of records. It's not hard to really sort that interior design out.
Yeah. Well, so everything will look kind of like a Whole Foods on the outside, basically.
I would mistake it from a distance for a Trader Joe's. That was
right.
the feeling I had.
Right. Well, I guess it's true. It's like because Amoeba is like brand-wise closer to Trader Joe's in terms of being sort of like a wacky 50s graphic design philosophy, you know, like tiki torch or Creature from the Black Lagoon. Which will it be?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, don't judge a book by its render. I mean... I can't imagine. I mean, friends of mine who run record labels still and who put out records differingly are both sort of like things are getting real weird in this business because among other things there's like no there's no record stores for people to go to. So sort of small to mid-sized record labels that really depend on you know, people buying stuff in stores or sales to distributors who sell stuff to independent record stores are effectively furloughed right now.
Yeah.
There's no reason to make the things because no one's going to be there to distribute them and no one's going to be there to pack them or unpack them. And then people who are artists on larger labels, they're continuing to release stuff, but they are not pressing physical copies. So in some ways, it's actually the record label's dream. Like their overhead disappears, and they still get to have like a press and promotional cycle. And then maybe when quarantine lifts or whatever, and they realize, you know, how popular something has been, or they can gauge the response to something, then maybe they actually press the copies. So it's kind of it's kind of like, you know, doing the advertising with the rendering, and if the ad's a success, you know, gets a lot of response, then you actually produce the item.
Sure.
You know, it's
just
like,
in time.
It's like working out that way for the music industry now, which is kind of interesting because it's like it is like one of the most cumbersome and like horrifying to produce physical items that, you know, people still use in culture. You know, like you don't buy VHS tapes anymore. No one bothers to buy DVDs anymore. However,
they're so cheap. They are so cheap.
They are so cheap. However, they still make records. There's still record stores. Records are awful for the environment to make. They're totally heavy. They're terrible to ship. They are like literally a problem no matter what. And that's true. It's like...
It's very true. Every time I've had to move, I hate my records.
Yeah. I have most of my record collection in my parents' basement. And... I have been gingerly acquiring records because there's been things that I just couldn't resist, you know, but generally I've been trying to not do it. Or I have to love the record, or it has to be a fantastic pressing of the record, or a very sensitive gift from a friend, for me to want to, or the work of a friend for that matter, for me to want to like take it in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, at some point, you know, I will settle in a place where I will have to get that stuff out of my parents' basement. And, you know, like I've had a really good excuse by being like, oh, you know what it would take to move all this stuff across the country. You know, we live in, our apartment's already full. It's fine here in the basement. But then can you imagine like eventually that won't work? Or if I move back to Canada or something like that, it's like, it's going to be carloads of heavy, heavy, heavy stuff. And it's going to suck. It's going to be terrible. Yeah. I'm going to hate it so much.
When I accumulated hundreds and hundreds of records when I was in college.
Yeah.
And when I left to move to LA, there was no way I could bring them all. So I trimmed it down to like 25 records or something like that. And my neighbors, who I didn't know particularly well, were having a yard sale.
Right.
And so I just said, hey, I saw this. I chatted with them and they said they're having on Saturday. I said, could I bring some records over to sell? And they said, sure. Didn't pay much attention to me. And I came over and I had like, you know, several crates of like choice records, you know, and I just put up $1 per record.
Uh-huh.
And it was totally worth it just to see like, you know, like the skinny pale guys like creep up to the yard.
Yeah.
And I start looking through the records expecting to see like, you know, 100 copies of Tijuana Jazz Band or whatever, a brass band. And there's just like genuinely good records in there for $1.
Wow.
I was like kind of shaking. I thought that was pretty fun.
What did you get rid of? What's the best thing you sold for $1?
Geez. I don't, what was I into at that point? There was a lot of like new age stuff.
Wow.
Which was starting to become popular. I've always been drawn to the bargain bin.
Yeah.
Which I guess is why at this point I only buy classical records really.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to wrap my head around a $75 record.
Totally.
Although I do really want an original pressing of that Robert Ashley record, Private Parts.
Oh, got one.
Yeah, I know you have one.
I want all the different colorways of that record.
Oh, there. I thought it was just yellow.
No, there's a gray one.
You need the gray one.
There's multiple colorways actually, and
is there a teal and a cherry red? You could get your whole oeuvre in there.
No, the funny part is I don't, and you'd think I would know, but I don't. I think that there's one that is significantly rarer, or one that came out first or something. I want to get that first edition of On the Other Ocean by David Berman, which they've just reissued, but.
Oh yeah, that is beautiful.
That is maybe
the
my favorite.
Probably good. That they did a good job.
Total. Well,
those guys do a good job.
They use the CD cover, not the LP cover.
What were they thinking?
That's the bait. I don't know. Yeah. So it's like, I'm writing a sternly worded email to Mimi Johnson right now. But I mean, and I'm sure David Berman did not care. Apparently, he is the most casual person in the world. So I think he was just like, sure, fine.
Yeah. I mean, it'll probably be like us in our 60s.
Yeah.
And people are like, hey, we're interested in that stuff you did 40 years ago. And you're like, oh yeah. Okay, cool. No
sure,
one else was.
Sure, man.
What are you smoking?
Yeah. I think that's probably likely true. How flattering. Yeah. Thank you.
Why not? Hun, guess what?
Yeah, totally. They're reissuing it. I mean, to be fair, it is the record label that put it out in the first place. It's putting it back out again. So that's nice. But and I would love to support Lovely Music at any point.
Oh, they're reissuing. I thought it was who did that Jacqueline Humphreys record?
Oh.
And the Laurie Spiegel. That was their first big issue. I thought they were doing it, but maybe I'm wrong.
Finders Keepers?
No.
Or the ones who did that Blue Jean Tyranny Pray for Rock
exactly.
record?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, I thought, maybe that's true, but I got the email from Lovely that they were available.
Oh, okay.
Again. So I just assumed that Lovely put it out again. But
wonderful.
Yeah. No, I think, but you know, it would be nice to have the original jam. It'd be nice to have the old tried and true. You know, I've already got all the Bob Ashleys from back in the day. Time to get the rest of it.
Totally.
Yeah. I've been I've actually been enjoying doing some listening to lesser Lovely records this week.
Oh, okay.
Paul Schrader. Wait, is that the director?
That's the film director.
Paul Schaefer, sorry.
Okay.
There's in the same
it's like Pierre Schaefer's nephew or something.
Yeah, who's just like kind of like a guitar tape loop guy.
Okay.
And it's so on the one hand, it's the kind of thing that like the advent of looping pedals has made really common, you know, like a Dustin Wong or other, this guy Craig Dunsmuir, in Toronto, like lots of guys, Pat Metheny, you know, later Pat Metheny or whatever, like that kind of.
So is it like in the way that the Daruti column sounds kind of quaint at this point?
Yeah, kind of. It's kind of like that. But then at the same time, like the cool part is that he's so good at playing guitar. It's like just total volcano, like Robert Fripp, guitar volcano kind of thing going on. Like it's really with that like very outdated use of like full sustained distortion. That, you know, now isn't cool anymore, or I guess is cool again, but, you know, is sort of like ironically cool now.
I see.
Yeah. So it's just this like total volcano music. Then like with like a looping pedal and you're like sick, you know, like, cause everyone else who does that kind of music now, I think is largely, you know, is like good at playing guitar or what have you, but they are not like coming out of sort of like a prog rock is cool background. They're coming out of a like, I think prog rock is cool, as opposed to being like, I learned how to play guitar so that I could, you know, be in an American prog rock band. You know,
right, or they didn't work through the Fernando Sor book or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Like they didn't function based on the idea of doing these kind of insane solos. But then at the same time, since it's a Lovely record, it's got like pretty nice electronic treatments and
what's the Bob Ashley line? It's like, it's hard to do complex practices without
sufficient preparation, without the necessary preparation.
Yeah, there you go.
Or is it dangerous? That's the question.
I.e. Fernando Sor.
Break your hand doing that kind of thing. but like, you know, it's the electronics are very nice. And then also it's tending towards kind of the new age as well. So he's got this like mellowing aspect to it. That's not just like raw jazz guitar vomit kind of thing.
I feel like we're really ripe for a revival of that stuff. Like, can you imagine like a contemporary musician, 24 years old or something, putting out like the Well-Tempered Clavier for electric guitar?
Like just like, yeah, I'm just gonna play some Bach. I'm real fast.
Yeah, and like, you know, like they play like at like the, you know, that like like the really hip Saturday Park concert in Highland Park that happens or used to happen.
Yeah, right.
And it's like you got like a couple people doing like laptop things, and this guy gets up there and it's just like, like just tapping the shit out of Bach. Yeah, exactly. I think people would love it. People would love it.
I feel like this is like maybe what will happen when gaming aesthetic, because this is already happening, I think, on like YouTube, for example, where there's those guys who are like, you know, they set up the webcam and they play every part of, you know, like a complicated canon or like every part of a video game soundtrack.
Yeah, it's like 16 different panels. And it's like,
and it's just him playing electric guitar, you know, playing like through the entire video game soundtrack, playing through entire film soundtracks, playing through. And obviously
Karma Police.
The guy's incredibly good at guitar. And and there's like 1 million likes, and I feel like seriously, right? And I feel like it's that's the guy who's like who's gonna like when that sort of like more recent like internet spoof TikTok etc. You know, the fact that it's kind of a stunt that he's so good at it. You know, like it's like bottle flipping. or like a skateboard trick, you know, it's all sort of like this one sort of like people are incredible moment.
Mm-hmm.
And like when that amazing humans aesthetic sort of crosses over into fine art, then yeah, you will just get that at the Highland Park thing. You will get like a Twitch, like some guy who got big for a Twitch stream where he like, played the Well-Tempered Clavier the fastest it's ever been played.
Yeah,
you know, but then did go to SVA or whatever in New York.
Whatever happened to that hobby where like you drive your Hummer or your truck really fast and you lift it up onto two wheels and then you kind of get outside of the car and you're climbing on it while it's driving on only two wheels?
Yeah, I don't know. I assume
that's
still
going
on. That's
a good quarantine hobby. Yeah, it's probably a good quarantine hobby.
Like, because no one... Well, I thought you would do that, but you would do that, like, with an audience, right? Like, there'd be, like, people cheering at a parking lot in Carson, you know, while you...
The videos I saw were mostly, like, in, like, seemed like the deserts of the Middle East. Those are the ones I saw for the most part.
I've seen a lot of them, things like that, in, like, Oakland.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I am sure Saudi princes do that. That is a sick hobby for a Saudi prince. Like you and your like rare wild cat sort of sticking your heads out of the side of your Hummer while it's like wheeling, doing a wheelie. Yeah, totally. Like waving to people with your falcon on one hand.
Right. I like the ones where they'd skip on the two wheels, they get out of the car and they take the other two wheels off of the vehicle.
Oh, whoa. I haven't seen that.
And they're just like... And then like they're like, well, like, you know, if this thing lands now, it's not going to go well.
Yeah.
And then they put the wheels back on and then they land the thing.
That's insane. Yeah. Just like he's got the socket wrench right there. Just like unhooks it.
Right.
Puts the sockets in his pocket.
Yep.
Wild. You know,
talk about disinterested interest.
Yeah. It's true, right? Like the only people capable of doing the Kantian sublime are the Saudi royal family. Just like, what are your hobbies? You're just like medium torture of human being. Falcon, large cat, wheelie in desert, custom motorcycle by Alvaro Julian. That's it. Just like whatever. This week, I'm just really into, you know, soap cutting videos.
My goodness.
Yeah. So, speaking of you can't judge a book by its render, we were talking earlier about video games. So, did you know about this video game called Death Stranding?
No, not at all.
So, I forget what his name is. There's an actor who is in things, who plays the main character, basically. And you're a delivery man in like this plague-ridden post-apocalyptic world delivering things. It was years in the making by like a sort of Japanese video game auteur. Hideo Kojima. Apparently it's this existentialist... nightmare that also everyone has been into. It's coming for Max around July 14th.
It's on PC now.
Yeah, and you just walk across North America.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Does it cost money? I'm sure it costs money.
It costs money.
Okay.
What's the name of this actor? I'm trying to see what
the Liam Neeson.
I mean, it's not it's not that different. It's got like
I'm trying to think of who would get cast in that role. Kurt Russell.
Norman Reedus.
I don't know him.
You'd recognize him. He's like a younger, more haggard version of that genre of guy. You know, because he's got to work this guy. You know, this character. But like Mads Mikkelsen's in this movie. You know, in this video game. Okay. Yeah, lots of people. Guillermo del Toro. Etc. Lots of people are in this movie. This video, I keep calling it a movie. But just like that and sort of like Animal Crossing being the two sort of video game sensations of quarantine. And not participating in any of them, really. You know, like I downloaded Untitled Goose Game.
How was that?
It's all right. You know, it's annoying. But I think that's kind of the point. It's pretty charming. It's hard. It's harder than you think, I guess, because it turns out that it's much more goal-oriented than I had hoped, I guess. Like, I had hoped that Untitled Goose Game would be more open world. You know?
I see.
That you would just be able to, like, be a goose.
Animal Crossing is that way, right?
It's very open, yeah. You can make up your own mind, and then and you can share make your place a certain way and then share it with people, which is, I think, really part of the appeal in general, but now more so than ever, you know, so because you can't have people over, so you can have them over in Animal Crossing.
I was speaking with Christian, our friend Christian, about that. He plays it, and it sounded compelling, but then he described there's an economy that sounds just like our economy in the game, and I was like, well, I don't need a virtual version of that.
Yeah, there's this raccoon called Tom Nook to whom everyone starts out the game in debt to them.
Yeah, no thanks.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah. Welcome to the land of Wells Fargo.
Yes. Hello, you've just arrived from the California Institute of the Arts. Here is your debt. Totally. No thanks. Not interesting.
By the way, there are no fields to be plowed in Animal Crossing.
Yeah. No, I like a friend of mine has been like stockpiling tarantulas, you know, in a terrarium, which seems sort of like disingenuous in an animal. I guess Animal Crossing is more about sort of mid-size animals interacting, right? It's not about, hello. There's some work from home cat content, mid-size animal content.
He plays Animal Crossing for sure.
Yeah, real life Animal Crossing with the real animals of Pasadena.
Speaking of Animal Crossings, we've been eating dinner in the backyard.
Oh, that's
which
nice.
Has been lovely. And there's a gutter that runs along the roof, and there's a mouse that lives in that gutter.
Oh.
And every night around sunset, that mouse like peeks up over the gutter and stares down at us.
Eating dinner.
Big ears. Yeah, and it's just like, hey, what are you guys doing? And then Chiquita sees that mouse, and it drives her crazy.
What'd she do?
There's no way she can get up. She just kind of like, does that clicking thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she does that. She's killed several mice here at this house, but that one's got a good system.
That one knows. Yeah, that one knows how to work this cat thing out. Mm-hmm. We have this incredible colony of grackles in the yard that Langley does not seem to be interested in eating. You know, I think she looks at the grackles as being sort of like more like her than less like her.
Mm.
But she sees these doves that like hang out on the trellis, and she sees them from above from the second story, and that drives her bananas. That is like like those she wants to murder. The grackles, she's like, all right, man, we're all just gonna get along, folks. It's no big deal. But like the doves get the full like treatment. Yeah. It is cute. We had an incredible speaking of the birds, we had this incredible near tornado wind and rainstorm last night. At around 5 a.m., just before dawn, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. It was like you know, the trees were bending all which way and the ball moss all fell out. And you know, it was absolutely nuts. And I like went and stood outside for a little while and checked it out. And I was like, whoa, crazy. And then went back to sleep.
Did it hail?
It hailed nearby. I don't think, I don't know if it properly hailed here or whether it was just being driven into the roof really hard. There weren't any cracked windows or anything like that. So I don't think it, if it did hail, it didn't hail. It wasn't crazy, but it was a really violent storm. The cats all hid, under the bed, and Meredith's first question, sort of like, while I was like, you know, milling around awake, looking at it, she was like, what did the birds do?
That's a pretty good question.
Yeah, it is. I think it's a good question, but it was one of those things where it's like, yeah, what do the birds do? You know, they don't go inside.
No.
And they live in the,
they just get pummeled.
And the tree is, you know, you assume they live in the tree, and the tree is like getting fucking its ass beat. So
yeah.
Yeah, the apparently what lots of birds do is they just leave the area. Which seems super smart. Like they have very well tuned senses of barometric pressure, and they're just like, yeah, let's get out of here. There's gonna be a storm. Let's go over there.
Yeah, this isn't gonna be fun. See you later.
Yeah, we're going over there. And then other birds hide in hedges. Yeah. Or like inside like the crook of a tree or something, like in a place where you know, you definitely aren't going to get shaken out of it. And you just wait till it washes over you and then hope you dry out enough to fly. But yeah, either you get pumped, you know, sort of stay close to like a big, big, big tree and hope you make it, or you just get out.
I mean, I guess all animals except for us treat shelter as an essential service. so, you know, like they don't, for the most part, don't bedazzle or overbuild or do those kinds of things. Yeah. They just think, I go and, you know, I use this when the sun is so hot that it'll kill me.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, birds do generally, like, rear their young out of nests.
That's true.
So there is, like, an amount of build-out involved. I mean, like, you don't necessarily...
But they also plan that around the weather, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like we mate around this time every year because it's been proven that when you do that, it works out best for the young.
Well, who knows how that works with the change of climate.
Yeah, it's true.
I was on a Zoom performance last weekend.
I watched your Zoom performance.
With Amy Howden Chapman?
Oh, no, I watched your thing on Sunday.
Oh, I did a lot of Zoom on the weekend. On Saturday, I did friend of the show, Amy Howden Chapman, did a performance that was scheduled to be for Earth Day and was scheduled to be an in-person thing, but was now a Zoom thing. And it was weird. It was about 56 people watched, which I thought was a lot, but I guess some of these, like, you know, Bernie Sanders Zoom calls or whatever have, like, you know, thousands of people on them. Which is absolutely wild. Like, imagining that is just crazy. oh, oops. Hello, you still there?
Yeah, you're quiet though.
Hold on, I knocked my phone off the table again. Hello?
Hello, that's better.
Wow. Yeah, that's for the knocking your phone off the table. That's what you get.
That's for the people at home. our fans at home.
Who are all at home, I hope.
Who couldn't make it out tonight to Skate Junk Studios.
It was the kind of work that I think actually does lend itself to a Zoom context. You know, like, it doesn't involve a lot of backwards and forwards. It's very like planar.
Was it a lead performance?
No, it was she had, I guess, over a while interviewed several environmentalists, journalists, scientists, etc., climate scientists, and then had them sort of talk about their feelings about being in that field, and then had assembled sort of a collage of those things, and then had different people read different parts of it. I see. So it's kind of like a low impact play, I guess.
Who read?
A bunch of people I don't know. Almost entire, all of them other than Amy and a guy who I assume is her dad, were all strangers. I didn't know any of them.
Where is she based now?
New York.
Okay.
And so it's like, it was already like pretty punishing, I would say, you know, as like a kind of work. And it was already pretty heavy and it's pretty long. So I think in a way it kind of worked out as just like a thing you could put on and listen to. And the visual aspect of it is like a little bit compelling, but not, you know, not overly compelling, I guess. But then the hilarious stuff happened. Like all these contingencies had to be created because like, what if someone's internet drops out? So there's like a reader of first resort and second, kind of like, you know, like what happens if the president is assassinated, then it's like the vice president becomes a president. And if it's not the vice president, then it's the speaker of the house or what, you know, it's like on and on and on. So it's like at some point, and obviously like the reader of first last resort was Amy, but then her internet threw her off the Zoom call. And so she,
okay.
So then, yeah, it's kind of amazing. Like, so she herself was like absent from the performance for a while. And then all her parts are read by someone else. And it was the pickup was seamless. Like the contingency plans work. And I suppose lots of these people are actually sort of were academics or involved in environmental justice otherwise. So I assume that they're like literally always in Zoom meetings anyway. So maybe they've acquired lots of sort of working experience around these kinds of tips and tricks or whatever.
I felt that way because Steve and I were at a birthday party on Monday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And it was my first Zoom experience.
Whoa. And so you lasted a long time.
Yeah. When I came into the Zoom thing, our friend Stacy, it was her birthday. I just saw, you know, like Ella and I in the corner and then Stacy. And I thought, oh, we're the only ones here. So I just started talking to her as if.
Yeah. You're like, oh, we're first.
Yeah, and then I scroll over, Ella scrolls over, and they're like, you know, 30 people or 20 people in there. I thought, oh, well, I'm a fool.
Yeah.
I just had no idea how it worked at all.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because, like, on the one hand, you know, it's like I used to have this sense of, like, just immense confidence about various platforms or whatever. You know, it's like, oh, how hard can it be? Like, you, like, connect to the thing, you say your thing, you, like, mute your microphone if you need to or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. like... But then, you know, all it takes is like a few little innovations and or a few tweaks to like the formula. And I'm like, I don't know how the system works. How's the system? Like, I feel like middle age is really set in, you know, like I'm just like, I don't know. How's this thing work? Like, how do you open PDF? Like,
right. How does it know who's talking?
How is Zoom? Did I Zoom okay? How is work? Yeah, it feels like that kind of thing. It feels like a sign that I'm losing it. That I've lost that, you know, or like and actually this is even weird, funnier is like because I've so continually sort of as hobbies at least worked on like computers in a way that has not in some ways has totally changed since the 1980s, but in terms of like interface has not changed since the 1980s. You know, I have a listeners might not know that I have a hobby as basically being like an IT guy, which I don't do for money. I just do it, for fun. It's kind of like a model railway or something like that, I think. So while I'm doing my IT at home, and yeah, there's innovations every day in this field, you know, that keep all the computers running. But it's like, so on the one hand, I feel like I'm very up to date with how computers work or what's available to you. And then on the other hand, like the more I invest in that like user space, like the more things that are designed for the open public mm-hmm. feel like absolutely foreign to me. Like I tried looking at navigating a Facebook page the other day and was like, to what end? What is all this for?
So
I did
much.
It again. I did that thing again. I did the thing again.
Wow.
What I do is I do this karate chopping hand gesture while I talk. And
I know that.
And my phone is on the table and my headset is plugged into the phone. And so I'll be talking.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm walking. I'm a little bit far away from the table with the phone on it. And then I do the karate chop and the karate chop pulls on the headset and yanks the phone from my phone onto the floor. This is what happens.
I have a bit of good news.
What is it?
So I've been sitting at home every day for 40 something days now, and I look out the window a lot. And today, Wednesdays, are street cleaning days on our street. And today, for the first time, I saw the Pasadena street sweeper, and it is painted and designed to look just like a Zamboni. I thought that was great news.
I believe they're related technologies.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, they're probably produced by the same people.
Yeah,
I just thought.
Zamboni,
you know,
Corporation.
The ones in L.A. proper look kind of like tanks, you know?
Huh.
Like, you don't want to get in the middle of that. This one looks like, you know, like, I'm sure you're Canadian. You've seen a Zamboni clean an ice rink.
Many times.
And there's a way in which it looks like the guy has to, like, spin the wheel a preposterous amount of times to get it to turn around.
Right.
It's like, yeah. And I just fantasize that the guy doing this sweeping the streets in Pasadena has the same problems.
Is that because, like, the Zamboni is supposed to be able to, like, basically turn on a dime, right? Like, it's supposed to be able to turn exactly around so that it can proceed back down the ice to resurface it.
I think it's also probably a really messy engineering problem getting something to move around carefully on a wet, slick surface.
Yeah.
Or a slick, icy surface.
Yeah, yeah. I like the fact that Zamboni is named after the guy who made them. Who developed,
right.
It's like John Zamboni or whatever is the guy who Gian Battista Zamboni is the guy who invented the Zamboni. I think it's great that you know, there's like a technology so niche that they didn't call it like ice surfacing device or like the Surfex or something like that. They were just like, it's a Zamboni. Get a Zamboni in here. Coach, you got to get
imagine if everything was that. Like, what would this laptop would be like, the Jobs Wozniak or something?
Yeah, totally. Totally. The Woz Jobs.
I'm going to refer to that from now on.
Yeah, get your Woz Jobs.
Hand me
on.
That Woz Jobs.
My Woz Job phone.
Right.
Yeah, totally. It's just so straightforward. You're like, oh yeah, Zamboni.
I wonder if that when that happens, if that means that it was, you know, because oftentimes there's like innovation in those fields or in that way happens simultaneously. Multiple people have the same idea and they develop the thing and there's some competition. But I wonder if the thing is named after the inventor, if it was just so out of left field, like it was like. They were cleaning ice a totally different way. It seemed fine. Nobody saw the need for a new one. And then here he is, Carlo Zamboni.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere, thought, I'll put a tractor on ice. And
right, right. Or like he did it in his hometown. And
right.
And the like, junior ice hockey games there, you know, didn't have these long, interminable ice resurfacing breaks in the middle, or like it was much safer and the players all had like 50% less injuries or whatever as a result of the ice surface being better groomed and some things of that nature. Yeah, I wonder. And no one had thought it possible. I know that there are other companies that make them and they're just universally called Zambonis.
They even market it as a Zamboni. My goodness.
Or well, no, but like when you see it, you don't say like, no, that's a Daihatsu, or you know, In
it's
fact,
a Corsair.
In fact, it's a Mitsubishi, you know, Super Deluxe.
I see.
I do believe Mitsubishi makes one. Is why I bring it up. But the funny thing
they
about
they make everything.
They do. The funny thing about Zambonis is I've mostly seen Zambonis in the Nintendo Entertainment System cartridge Blades of Steel. That's where I've seen the most Zambonis. Used to play that.
It's a hockey game.
It's a hockey video game for the original NES, and it was extremely popular when I was a child. And that's
it. Did the players have weapons?
No, but you could fight.
Okay.
You could like,
I always liked the NES sports games where there was an added layer of complexity where like that you had like a gun or you were Mega Man or something.
You were robots or something. Yeah.
I liked that where it's like, okay, you got to play soccer, but you can also shoot each other with like giant balls of fire.
But what was,
like, well, that complicates things.
Yeah. What was cool was a, like the Zamboni would run around in between periods, which was very like, you know, kind of right. like, a level of 8-bit accuracy that felt amazing. And then between the second and third quarters, you would get periods, you'd get to like play another video game on the Jumbotron.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you could play like a little bit of Galaga on the Jumbotron. And then it would
like
drop
Pong
you back
or
in.
Something.
Yeah, yeah. And then the crowd would cheer and then you would get to resume hockey. And I mean, for the most part, it was fun because you could just make people fight. But like it was also one of the first games where I believe it sort of simulated approximately that there was team rosters and different teams, you know, so like it had NHL approval and you could play as the Edmonton Oilers, who were the team to beat at the time. And your jerseys would be the right color, you know, or you could play, because that's where Gretzky played. Gretzky played for the Oilers. And this was the era of peak Gretzky where he was the world's greatest hockey player.
I thought of him as a Kings player.
He became a Kings player in
a
move,
in
money
move
that was largely regarded as like the most incredible betrayal. It was like a traumatizing of it was it. I remember hearing about it on the news incessantly, and literally everyone said bad things about it in the Canadian press. But yeah, then,
and the Kings are Los Angeles, right?
Yes,
or
exactly,
they were?
Yeah. Remain
Los Angeles. So he just wanted better weather or something.
I mean, I can't blame him.
You pulled a Gretzky, Steve.
I followed my idol Wayne Gretzky to Los Angeles.
You should really begin your artist talks that way.
Well, my career really began when I followed my hero Wayne Gretzky to
from Edmonton to
from my home in Edmonton. Well, he's actually from Brantford, Ontario, which is like just down the road from Toronto. So.
Okay. Yeah. So exactly.
Kind of not so different.
He carved a deep groove for you to just slide through.
A luge path. The second most popular Canadian sport, luge. Mm. I remember well. I don't remember the Zamboni much because I wasn't much into team sports. But I spent a great many hour with my friends at the luge track, just doing the luge. It is thrilling.
You know the video games I liked as a kid were the Olympics games.
Oh, yeah.
It was always fun to play against my brother or friend or whomever wanted to play because invariably, you know, you were good at some of them but not good at others.
Yeah.
Like you got the technique down for the long jump, but then you sucked at the, you know, shuttle throw or whatever it is.
And I remember the controls for those things being like extremely vague,
like left, right. You have to hit left, right, and you have to like hit right the last second or something.
Yeah, like the programmers were really struggling to come up with like how to represent shot put, how to represent hammer throw.
Shot put in three buttons. Good luck.
Yeah, how to what part of the sport you were trying to simulate by what part of the controller. I never really played the Olympics, but the version of that I liked that maybe had more of an effect on me was California Games.
Oh, that was excellent. Yeah.
Which was like the Olympics, but cooler.
Right, because there was skateboarding, and
surfing,
and smoking joints and stuff.
Joint rolling, yeah. Yeah,
joint rolling.
Yeah, radical hoolie dude, the computer graphics ape would say to you, and then you would get on your surfboard and surf away. I was always very bad at the surfing. The surfing was like kind of hard. I would only ever complete a whole course of surfing maybe like every third time.
That's fair. I think in reality surfing is quite hard too,
you know, but like there was that kid at the sleepover who just nailed it every time. It was like,
oh, is he jumping off the wave and doing tricks and stuff?
Yeah, all that stuff. Anyway, well, we've hit a level of nostalgia previously as yet unpenetrated by the talking show. We've gone all the way back in time. I'm wearing sweatpants. I just had sugar cereal that I am not normally allowed to eat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What kind of sugar cereal?
I wasn't allowed to have any of it. So, I mean, I only really treat it as like a desirable thing as a child because I was precisely not allowed to have it.
Right.
I don't think I ever did and to this day still do not really enjoy it. It's just that, like, at one point I had convinced myself that I should. And now I'm like, no, 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 I'll just have the chips. Still love the chips.
Yeah, yeah, I liked Cracklin' Oat. That was what I liked as a kid.
What's that?
They're these, like, small rectangles that have beveled edges. They're dark-colored oat bran of some sort, condensed oat bran. They have a touch of honey. It's a very unappealing-looking cereal.
It's an extremely reasonable-sounding cereal to like as a child. It's not shaped like a weird gay-coded vampire or something like that. It's
no, it wasn't popular amongst the kids. I ate it because my grandfather ate it. It also was one of those cereals that came in like a much smaller box than the children's cereals.
Oh.
Which yeah. always, you know, kind of meant
like
they were
adult
more
cereal box.
Yeah, they were serious cereals for whatever reason.
Oh, wow. You want to just present as like a serious little guy, and that's why you had the adult cereal?
I think so. Well, I had this like... I had what I guess became like a pretty intense trauma surrounding cereal. It's not that juicy of a story, but I was with my grandfather and my brother at my grandparents' house in Idaho, and I was eating cereal in the morning, and my grandfather looked at me really sharply and said, "Can you please keep your mouth closed while you chew?" Because I was chewing with my mouth open.
Yeah.
But that was the moment where,
like,
you know,
a goblin.
I guess I'd reached an age where, you know, at some point that's acceptable. Mm-hmm. And then at some point it does not become, it, you know, it's no longer. So it was like one of the many early life introductions into the symbolic order. Because I just had no idea that the sound I heard in my head was altered for other people with my mouth open or closed. Because, you know, it kind of sounds the same for you either way.
Close to. Okay, yeah. I'll give you.
Yeah. So I just like chewing away with my mouth open and then realized that there'd been years where I was just sounding like a goblin, as you say, everyone. So maybe that was why I chose to try and keep my mouth closed and eat Grandpa's cereal.
Wow. And then that way, like, Grandpa would also like see that you had the same taste in cereals as he. And therefore, like, that... In addition to you now no longer like talking with your mouth open, you would also chewing with your mouth open. You are also like making the same wise choice.
Yeah, just trying to get his approval, whatever cost possible. I sacrificed the Dracula cereal.
Wow. Yeah, we had Lucky Charms in Canada.
And okay, yeah, we had that.
Which is the racist leprechaun towards the Irish. And then we had a... various of those like General Mills, like the Count Chocula, Fruit Brute, etc. such cereals.
What was the we had Fruit Loops.
There's Fruit Loops. That's the toucan Sam. But there was a short lived, highly queer coded, sort of like pink Frankenstein called Fruit Brute.
No, we didn't have that I know of.
It was short lived. Count Chocula, long-lived. Fruit Brute, short-lived. you know...
Did you have Fruit by the Foot and Fruit Roll-Ups and all those things?
Yeah, yeah. All those things made it to Canada. But then there was lots of other... I can't remember which ones they are now, but there were lots of them that we just simply didn't have. And, like...
I was so fond of the commercials for those because it was always, like, you know, it showed, like... them in the factories producing the thing and something would go terribly wrong. And that was the image of innovation. It was
and that was the new flavor. And we like,
yeah, some goofball pulled the wrong lever and blah, 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 we have Fruit by the Foot in slime green.
It's not untrue.
I'm going to choose to represent my art practice and artist talks in that way.
That's the best thing actually. Yeah. Like specifically with a sound effect.
I was reading Adorno and then I started working on this sculpture and
I was reading Adorno walking around my studio not looking where I was going when all of a sudden I tripped and fell on the lever that makes the artworks and
the lever that and that got mixed with two buckets of oops paint
And it turned out to be an image of my father.
In his underwear.
It was a picture of my father.
Oh my gosh. Well, on that note, people.
Good night.
We're going to have to say good morning.